Hey, good morning, everyone. Let me get my notes up. I didn't get them pulled up before I came. I pulled them up this morning on my laptop and in the other room, and then came to this room and realized I had not pulled my notes up. I was like, ah. Also, we might have visitors. We've got, first of all, Mamie's here. And so that means Sissy is here, her dog, who is barking in the other room as we speak. What cracks me up is that our cats finally saw Sissy for the first time, and Sissy whimpered, and then the cats both fuzzed up, but they were like, "Stand my ground. This is where I live, bitch." It was funny. It was like a little cat dog standoff this morning. So, all right, let me get up my Q&A. Let me pull up the coach of record. Got to get everything organized. And I also want to wish all of us who are in the United States happy Thanksgiving. We are going to my brother's today for the one of two feasts. So Aunt JJ is cooking today, which all of you know is going to be a definite like throwdown. Like Aunt JJ can cook. Like she can cook like nobody's business. And then there is we're basically having turkey, ham, 400 carbs of all varieties filled with cream and butter. And then if it's a vegetable, it's got butter or it's fried. I don't know. Like, well, we are having some bacon broccoli, which means we for all y'all have to do this. Let me just tell you this quick recipe, then we'll get to what we're going to be doing today. You take broccoli and you put it on a sheet pan, and then you just dice up a bunch of bacon and you literally throw the bacon all on top of the, you want it on top of the bacon. I mean, on top of the broccoli. I don't know how long she bakes it. I would say probably, you just have to look at it. You're just going to have to watch it and get it to your temperature or get it to your, like, how much you want your bacon cooked, because or your broccoli, because some people like, I like mine cooked to death. Some people like theirs, like, broccoli forward. But you basically, you let the bacon cook on top so it drips the bacon fat all over the broccoli. And then about halfway through, she tosses it. And then, like, I don't know, just whatever you cook bacon on, Google it, Pinterest it, just like what's a good temperature for roasting broccoli and bacon off some bacon. So I know y'all are like, what's the temperature and all that junk? Look, bitches, I have no clue. I'm just telling you, I bet if I had to, I could chop up some broccoli, throw in some bacon, and figure it out in my oven without needing somebody to give me a personal tutorial. So just go to the YouTubes, go to the Googles, go to the Pinterest, and I bet you can figure it out lickety split. And she just played with it. Like she was just like, I'm going to try this. But I'm going to tell you, that's the one dish I'm looking forward to today because I've been having her make it for me like every week. And it is amazing. Talk about if you are not a broccoli fan, you might just be a broccoli fan after you do the bacon trick. All right. Let's talk today about, first of all, we have a special quick hit that we dropped for all of you. It's the latest one. It's called How to Handle Your Hardest Holiday Situations. So it's going to give you a four-step process that I came up with for handling all the usual situations that are going to come up in your life. And you will also get a link to the Dealing with Holiday Situations worksheet. So it's just four simple steps. This is the thing. None of you are walking into a landmine or some type of unexpected event. If Uncle Bosevis acts the ass, he's going to do it again this year. If your mom pushes food on you, guess what? She's going to do it this year. If your kids argue when they're together, this is not the year that they're not going to argue. Whatever happens, always happens. It is very rare that someone comes on and is like, I need to get coached. This rare anomaly in my family happened at this holiday season. It's usually, I need to get coached because every fucking time I go home or every time we get together or whatever, this is the bullshit of my life. Or you already know it's going to happen. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today, which is change. A lot of you are, this is the first time that your kids are not coming home for the holidays. This is the first time that, you know, you're not going to have a loved one. You're going to go somewhere different, do something different this holiday. And you're very accustomed to your traditions. And this year, it's going to be different. I will just say, as someone who, our traditions change about every year. Like we literally, we never know who's going to be doing what every year. Usually my brother and sister-in-law, they go to West Virginia. Well, her parents are moving. My mom usually stays in Florida. We've gone to Vegas before. We just like every year we're kind of pulling it together to figure out what we're going to do this year. For me, just to give you a mindset tip is a long time ago, and this was really important because when my grandparents died, all of our traditions died. Like it was, you know, it was really tough because like, especially on Christmas and stuff, there was always, we did Christmas, like you did your family Christmas, and then everybody always went to Granny and Papa's house. And then after my grandfather died and then my grandmother died a few years later, we didn't do that anymore. It was like we were a little untethered for a couple of years trying to figure out what we were going to do. And my cat Nacho is down here like begging. Like he looks like he wants to be in my lap. He can't figure out why I'm teaching right now. So one of the things that that I kind of realized going through all that was that I didn't want traditions to be what defined the holidays. I wanted my thoughts about the people I love to define the holidays. Because this is the thing. I can have amazing thoughts about my grandparents anytime I want. I can have amazing thoughts about my family anytime I want. I can't control traditions. You know, when someone gets married, just like a good example, we started a tradition last year that on Thursday, on Thanksgiving, that I would take everybody out to dinner. Aunt JJ likes to cook one meal. She did that last year on Wednesday. It's kind of a Friendsgiving. So all of our family comes. And then my brother's friends all come because a lot of them are basically he's friends with a bunch of 40-year-olds who are not married. And so they don't always have, like, sometimes they go to their parents, like they're a little untethered in their life. And so we didn't go last year. Well, we're going this year because these are the friends that always, we vacation with them every year in the summer. So we're like, we might as well go. And we all live on the same side of town now. Well, last year we started a tradition of going out to eat. Well, this year, my niece is not coming with her boyfriend. She's going to his house for their Thanksgiving. And so, you know, it's real easy to get caught up in the wrongness if things aren't staying the same. But I like to think about, I don't want that for me. It's definitely sad sometimes when things can't happen. And I'm okay with being sad. Like, of course, I'm disappointed she's not coming. Or of course, sometimes I wish that things were different. But I draw the line at anger. And I draw the line at resentment. I draw the line at like allowing myself to dwell, obsess, and make it mean horrible things. Like, for instance, there are some people probably listening to this call right now that if they're, you know, somebody in their life isn't coming to their house, they've decided to go to another house, it means we're not connected or they don't love me. They're putting them above me. I mean, you can think that all you want. And I just want you to know those are some wicked, painful thoughts. But if you want them, keep them. Just know that that is your current interpretation of things. And it's either going to ruin your holiday or you can still save it. Here's some of the things I like to think about. I think about my niece. She knows how much we all love her. She is so strong in the love of all of us. And I will just be honest, her boyfriend does not have amazing relationships with his parents, which makes you wonder, like, why is she not just bringing him here? I think it's because of that. I think she wants to be there for him. I think she knows that this is like one of the few times he might actually feel like his family's a little normal. We feel pretty normal most of the time. But I don't make it mean something bad. Like, she doesn't love us enough or whatever. I just choose to believe, like, she loves us so much that she knows that she could spend that holiday somewhere else and we'd never quit loving her. And that is a thought that really helps me. Am I going to miss her? Of course. Do I wish she would be here? Yes, because she's hilarious and I love talking to her. But I draw the line between making myself emotionally burdened or extra miserable. It's like, I can deal with sadness and missing someone, but it's really hard for me to deal with anger, catastrophizing, making things mean things that they may not mean, exaggerating my own stories and stuff. That's when Corinne needs to eat and drink. And so I always think about, like, all right, whatever is going on in my life, how can I at least think about this in a way that doesn't drive me closer to needing to handle my emotions in a way that makes me eat and drink? Someone said, can you explain how you draw the line? Yeah, I literally, Terry, I make a list of, this is what's nonsense with Corinne. This is what tolerable is for Corinne. I can tolerate missing her. I think it's normal to miss her. I can tolerate disappointment. I'm disappointed she's not going to be here because I love her. I want you to think about that. That is very different than I'm devastated because my niece isn't going to be here because I think she should be. It's ruining our holidays, or she must love them more. Like, this is just like her putting others above us. That's unnecessary. And I'm going to tell all of you, some of you, if you want to think that, a lot of you have those thoughts. I just want you to question, is that truly based in reality? Sometimes, like, for a lot of us, like, I remember for years, for Christmas, we went to Chris's family's house in Union City. We did not spend, this was after my grandparents died. I did not spend it with my mother and stuff. And let me tell you, on my side, like, I know my mom had a host of thoughts, some lush, some not. But I'm going to tell you on my side of the story. We, like, Chris got one holiday a year with his family. It was the one time that he got to experience the holidays with his brother or time with his brother. If we were going to spend time with him, it had to be at Christmas because they are, like, always busy, always doing things. My son adored his grandparents. He loved Mammy too, but Richard and Trisha, they were a grandfather and a grandmother, and he enjoyed being there. And as much as I wanted to be with my mother, my son just was so bonded to them. I was not hating on my mother, but I was just making a choice where I was going to spend my time trying to take care of my new family. And I think sometimes as parents, we want our babies with us, and we forget when they are in other relationships, they're trying to balance a lot of relationships. And sometimes we don't cut them any slack. It's not easy. I also think that when kids are in their 20s, especially your kids that are under 25, they don't even have a rational brain that's fully formed yet. They just think you're going to love them no matter what. Yeah, they're probably going to put their friends above you. Not because they love you less, but because at this point in life, sometimes that's, like, very important to them. They're not thinking about hurting you. They're thinking about what's important to them. Just like when you're sitting there wanting them with you, you're thinking about what's important to you, not necessarily what's important to them. As humans, we all do that. And I just think that sometimes when it comes to changing family traditions, I don't mind y'all being upset. And I think sometimes you have legit reasons. I just want you to really understand your reasons. And I want you to say, I choose this reason and I choose this feeling that comes along with it. I also invite you to have equal airtime, which means here's another cat. Look at this. This is Lakita. We call her Loco for short because she's crazy. What we do is we don't even allow ourselves to say, like, okay, I believe this story I'm telling myself. Is there any other way to look at this? Any other possibility? Can I just put myself in their shoes for a minute just to see? It does not mean that you have to gaslight yourself. It doesn't mean that you have to diminish your thoughts and your feelings. But sometimes having perspective allows you to at least feel a little less hurt or a little less upset. So for all of you, my best advice when it comes to changing family traditions is to just really sit and think about, what are my current thoughts about it? Make a list. And then how does each one of those thoughts make me feel? And just be with that for like a day. You don't have to change any of it. Just understand that if daughter is going to in-laws instead of my house, now you have the neutralized fact. Everything else, like, what do I think about that, is now my interpretation. This is my side of the story. This is how I'm viewing it. And each one of these sentences make me feel something. Then I like, if I'm just like throwing together something for y'all, if you want to do a step two, put yourself in the shoes of the other person. Tell what you think their side of the story could be if it wasn't to just hurt you or to be a mirror of your story. Just so you can see, sometimes just getting a different point of view will lessen the intensity of your own story, and then you don't have to do anything else. So you tell it from their point of view, and you take each sentence and you put a feeling with that. This is probably how they're feeling. Like if they're like, decided to go to mother-in-law's, wanted to come to my mom's, but felt like I should be there. Probably the feeling is conflicted. Like, I just want you to see, like, everybody has thoughts and feelings. And then once you have two sides, then you have like this third step you could take, which is thoughts and feelings I want to keep that I think are normal. So we're just kind of remixing. All we're doing here is when we tell the story, we're just noticing our thoughts and feelings. When we tell their side, we're just noticing what their thoughts and feelings could be. And now in the middle, we just kind of want to normalize. We just want to pull out, like, here's thoughts and feelings I'm having that are probably normal. And I wouldn't eat over them. I wouldn't drink over them. I wouldn't yell over them. I wouldn't isolate over them. Like, I wouldn't do these things over them. And then you could do your next best thought or action. You could take a look at all of those normal things that you have, and you can decide, knowing these are the ones I want to keep, now what do I actually want to think about this changing tradition? And based on that, how do I really want to show up for myself? Because I think a lot of you want to enjoy your holiday. what you, you know, and let's just keep it to weight loss. Y'all are here because what you don't want to do is like, if I gain a pound or two over Thanksgiving, I want it to be because I actually really enjoyed my food. I want it to be because I was eating bacon, broccoli, JJ's homemade mac and cheese, that kind of stuff. That's what I want it to be. I'm going to Del Frisco's. I'd love to like, you know, say like this pound on my ass was worth it because that steak was fucking delicious. That's what I want. Here's what I don't want. I don't want to be up a pound or two or more because I sat around feeling sorry for myself. I was so disappointed and angry and resentful and mad at the world that I ate when everybody went to bed, or I ate extra at the dinner, or I did those things because I was just sitting there in my own head. That's not worth it, pounds. And let me tell you, those pounds are very hard to lose because every time you gain emotional weight, you're teaching yourself to deal with your life with food. If you gain weight simply because it's a holiday with special foods and you like them and you're like going in not super emotionally charged, guess what? Those pounds come off real easy because Monday is not a holiday. It's actually really simple. There's no one here who's overweight because they only overeat on the holidays. That's what thin people do. Thin people aren't sitting around all the time eating because they're pissed at people. But you know what thin people do? They get their grub on at the holidays and they're fine for it. All right. So let me see if there's anything else in my notes. If y'all have any questions or anything you want to say, put it in the Q&A. So I can see it and then I can help y'all. I do want to announce that next week we have our final Handling the Holidays call. And it is with Kathy Hartman, who is actually the moderator of this call. You see Kathy's on stage right now and she's in the chat. She is going to be doing a special grief call. And let me tell you, she's been studying, she's been preparing, she's been doing all the things. You know, Kathy Hartman is very detailed. She does not take anything lightly. She is going to be teaching Allowing Grief. It's 3 steps for coping with losses. It's the Kathy Hartman Q&A takeover. And then she will also be, so that's going to be on November 29th, next Wednesday. So she's going to take over this Q&A next week. Then she's going to be doing on Thursday a grief coaching call. So if you are grieving and you want coaching, you can attend at 6 p.m. Central Time. All right. The only other things I want to say about the holidays is just a couple of little side notes, which is number one, just know that changing traditions is normal, very normal. You know, your traditions are never going to be the same. So I think sometimes just knowing that it's supposed to change, it's supposed to be a little fluid, it's not always going to be the same, allows you to let down your guard of like, we go from being disappointed to almost rebelling that there is a change. And so I just encourage all of you when it comes to your traditions, honor the ones of your past. And then as the traditions change, find ways to honor them without having to keep such a tight grip on everything having to be the same. Then Terry says, I don't overeat over feelings right now. I tend to isolate. You know, that's actually good, Terry. I want you to think about this. When you isolate, when you're eating, we're like really just avoiding our feelings. Now when we're isolating, we're actually finding a new way. And very often isolation is a first step to figuring out how to be there for yourself. Because you can't be there for yourself when you're eating or when you're busying through your feelings. But when we isolate, we're with ourselves. And I think sometimes we think that that's a bad thing. But I want you sometimes to look at, could I make my isolating a little bit more purposeful? What would it look like if I made it productive? Because I'm an isolator. So when my feelings are out of whack or whatever, I am the first one to be like, I'm out. I need to be alone. And I mean, everybody knows it. And I lay low for a reason, because for me, when I isolate, I can cry. I can be as enraged as I want, and I don't do collateral damage. There's only one person hurting, and that's me in that moment. No one else has to hurt, and I'm not avoiding. Isolation forces me to feel. Now, does everybody around me love it? No. But I like to think of it as self-preservation for me and others. And then now what happens is when I isolate, it doesn't take as long. It used to be a long time. Like I would stew for a long time. Like I did that the end of summer, we took a vacation. I did like, and I mean, we flew. This was, I went almost 24 hours without speaking to Chris and Logan. And we had to be in a car. I isolated in my head. But I was so upset with what was going on that I knew that if I didn't withdraw, I was going to say some really bad things and harmful things to people that I love the most in the world, that I would never want them to, I would rather them remember me being pissed for a day than for them to remember harmful words I would throw at them. And that's because I am so self-aware. I know my limits. I know when I'm fixing to be an asshole, and I don't do that anymore. And so sometimes I think we just have to look at our isolation a little different. Now, isolation can go wrong if you're getting like super depressed. You're just there's withdrawing and then there's isolating. So for all of you, you have to know, like where's your line? And I'm just very good about understanding my lines because I've always asked I've never made myself wrong for how I handle things. I always try to tell myself, like, if you're not wrong in this moment, what do you most need? Because so often we make ourselves wrong for how we're handling things. And then when we do that, we get into more shame and then we just isolate more and we just start spiraling out of control. I just choose to not make myself wrong on how I handle things. I'm just always like, look, whatever you're doing right now, you must need it. But how can we make this more productive? How can we really be there for ourselves? Also, for some of you, when it comes to changing traditions, there are some of you who just need to have a conversation with people, but get your mind right. Like, I'm not going to go talk to my niece thinking you must love them more than us. But if I go and talk to my niece about, I'm just really going to miss you. Is there any other time that we can get together while you're in town? Because I was really hoping you would be here. That's a very different conversation. So for some of you, as traditions are changing, just tell people how you feel. But do the work first of what I told you in the first part of the call. Really understand how you want to feel about it. Don't just tell them the load of crap that comes up in you. Most people do not respond well to you throwing your mental doo-doo right at them. I mean, it's like, I've got old shitties. It stinks in my head. So here's what I want to do. I want to be a toddler. I want to take some of this out of my head, out of my dirty diaper, and now I just want to smear it all over the walls of your brain. Because you know how we all love it when a child smears shit on the walls. Do not take your shit and smear it on their walls. Take your honest, truest feelings and communicate them. That's very different. And then plan to create new meanings and memories with yourself. Like if your traditions are changing, use this as an opportunity to figure out, what would you like a new tradition to be? Like there was someone the other day, she was posting in the Facebook group and it was so hilarious. Her husband, I think it's for either Christmas Eve or something like that. She was talking about how her husband just every year, he sits at home with her. I think he wants to go hunting or something like that. And he basically sits there with a scowl on his face or something like that. And she is like, I am just done with the tradition, like trying to uphold this. Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to tell him, you go on your merry way. And I will be in my Christmas PJs. I will have like my Christmas treats planned. And I am watching me some fucking movies all day long by myself. And I was like, you do it. But that's the thing. It's just like, I'll tell you one of my traditions on Christmas. And I know we celebrate all kinds of holidays, y'all. I just happen to be saying Christmas, but happy Hanukkah and all the other things that we'll be celebrating throughout the month from now until the end of the year. I go live with y'all every Christmas. That's my tradition. And I started it a few years ago when no one comes to our house. Most people in our family don't celebrate. Like, my mom stays in Florida now. Once she moved down there, she doesn't like to come up here. My boys almost could care less about Christmas. We're just not going to have a Hallmark. The only Hallmark movie moment we're going to have in this house is if I turn on a Hallmark movie. In fact, I decorated the house, and tomorrow I'm sure my family will come over for 1 hour. That will be the extent of what will happen in terms of Christmas celebrations. We just don't do much. So a few years ago, I just really thought about, where would I want to spend my time? If I want to make this day special, what makes it special? I go live every year on Christmas because we have a lot of people who do not celebrate Christian holidays and still need help with weight loss. We have a lot of you who are lonely on the holiday. You don't have anybody. And this call is the only, like, this call is something you get to look forward to, where you can be with other people. You cannot claw that. Sorry, she's throwing her catnip fish right into the curtains and then clawing the curtains as she does it. So I just, like, I want all of you to think about, what kind of traditions can you start? Is there something special you can do for you? Does it even have to involve other people? Like, feel free to break the mold of what traditions have to look at or look like, because they don't have to look the same. All right, let's see. Somebody said, I don't like the holidays anymore. I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big lover of the holidays myself. I just ain't. I mean, we do things, but I mean, if it was just a normal time of year, I'd probably never miss it either, to be quite honest. It just is, you know, I loved the holidays when I was little. Now that I'm an adult and my son never enjoyed them, they were always too overwhelming for him, too overstimulating and stuff. I just had to let it all go a long time ago. And I'm going to tell you, as a mom with a kid with autism, it would be really easy every fucking year to think I've been cheated or to think that this is bad or this is wrong. I had a few years like that when Logan was little, where I mourned and grieved that I was never going to have Christmas mornings like I had as a child, or that I was ever going to get that experience. And it's still a little sad, but I let it go a long time ago for my sake, because that was just an uphill battle. It was not going to change. Wishing for it, regretting it, thinking it was unfair was never going to change my circumstance, but it was for sure changing my holiday experiences every year. It was changing my mood every year. And if you can't change a circumstance, then you have to change your thinking about it. All right. I've been divorced for 20 years. I got Christmas Eve in the divorce. Last year, I didn't host, and so my ex was invited and didn't follow any of the traditions I'm hosting this year and not inviting him. But my kids feel guilty, even though they know he would not come anyway. And my grandkids do not understand. I'd like to develop better thoughts other than anger at him for disrupting. Well, here's one, Catherine. I think it's normal for kids not to understand it. Like, the grandkids aren't probably supposed to understand. Hey, stop. Hang on, y'all. Your claws out. Oh my God, this cat. Here, take your fish. Come here. Go. Okay, sorry. She's going to rip the curtains down behind me. Oh my word. Y'all, I feel like I have adopted a toddler. So anyway, I think one painful thought that you have is, the grandkids don't understand like they're supposed to. Grandkids are not supposed to understand this. But here's what I would be thinking. The grandkids are probably not going to even care on Christmas morning. Grandkids are not going to be sitting around going like, I wish grandpa was here. They're going to be like, what did I get? Number one, it's probably not on their mind near as much as on yours, Catherine. And I don't know how old they are, but that's probably what I would be thinking is that my grandkids may not understand, but it's probably not on their mind like it's on mine. That could be one leveled up thought. As far as your kids, they feel guilty. You can't control their feelings. You could be compassionate though. Like you don't have to feel bad that they feel guilty, but you could feel understanding like, well, yeah, this is different. And he would not come no matter what we did. So like that, like switching to understanding and switching to compassion feels different than feeling bad about your kids feeling guilty. Hey, quit bringing that fish over here. Sorry, y'all. Next week, I will lock her out. I normally have the door shut, but I left them open by accident. Oh, my God. So, hey, Chris, is that you? Oh, that's Mammy. Never mind. So, let's see. What else? Can you just, never mind, the cats are in here. I'm trying to get them out. Any suggestions for communicating around holiday expectations? Trying to blend my new husband's holiday history with my own kids that are all grown and moved away. Yeah, I would just like, I would do like I said, just to like write it out first. Here's how I want to communicate it. And then I would like, this is what I do in business. So you write it out how you want to communicate it. So that's like your idea. And what I always tell my team is like, before we act on an idea, because ideas always sound great. So however you're going to communicate probably sounds great to you. Then you ask yourself, what could go wrong here? What are the unintended consequences of this? So you kind of look at it through the filter of how might they interpret this just to make sure that you're not just saying things that could like where you're trying to manipulate the situation and stuff. So for example, you know, you might want to look for like, we should do this. We have to. So you want to look for things like that. I always believe that this thing. We can't control how other people feel. You never can control how someone else is going to feel about something. You cannot control how they're going to think about something. But what you can do is you can present whatever it is in the best possible way to where it will trigger, hopefully, better thinking. A lot of us don't think about that. Like if somebody on my team was to make a mistake, I can say, hey, you made that mistake. You better not ever do that again. They're probably going to be triggered with, oh my God, my job's in danger. I better get on the stick. They're going to feel like fear or shame. Or I can say, hey, the way you did this, next time, let's do it this way. Do you think you can do that? And they're going to probably feel more like understanding and clear. So it's all about sometimes what we want to do. Like if you're going to be communicating these things, I would just write down how you want to say it, like what you think, and then read it over and be like, all right, is this the best possible way to present it? What do I think that they'll think and feel? And then just kind of like just change it around some until you feel like, okay, this is really clear. This is really good. Like, and they may still be upset or not like it or not understand or whatever. But sometimes when we don't prepare for those conversations, we just kind of go in with our fear that everybody's going to be upset. And then we talk about it from worry and fear, and it never comes across good. If you go in from this idea of like love, like, I want you to like really understand, that will have a much better usually outcome than anything else. We have custody of our grandson, and every year we have gone to my daughter's and spent the night on Christmas Eve and morning. In the recent years, it's just got so crazy. And now she has three dogs and there really is no place other than sleeping on an air mattress. How do I handle my daughter's reaction? I know she is going to be super upset, even though I'm offering them to come here. She tends to throw comments like, we have other grandchildren. So here's the first thing, Anonymous. Your daughter, she can throw any comment she wants at you. So what? Like, your problem right now is like, oh my gosh, this is what you need to look at. I'm going to say these things to my daughter. She's going to be upset. And I make that mean what about me? That's where we need to be working. So I would take it to ask coaches, because the problem isn't that your daughter's going to get upset. It's like, you know, your daughter, if she's likely to get upset, and you know, I don't blame you. I would not want to go over there and sleep on air mattresses with three dogs running around. Here's my thought. I'm going to offer my house. She's likely to be upset. And I totally get that. She's probably going to say, well, you've got other grandchildren and stuff. And she's right. I do have other grandchildren and stuff. And this one I have custody over, and I'm going to make a great holiday. She may not realize how great it can be. Like, I want you to be thinking about that instead of what, when we're like, when she says, you've got other grandchildren, you need to do, that's where we do our own journaling work. What do I make it mean when she says stuff like that? Do I make it mean I'm not a good mother? What do I make it mean? Because that's where your suffering comes in. It's like, she can say those things and you can say, yeah, and I really want my grandchild to have an amazing Christmas. I don't want to sleep on an air mattress. That's not unreasonable. Even if she reacts this way, even if I think it's unreasonable of her, it's not unreasonable of me. And I just always think, like, people, most people do have irrational thoughts. I mean, just think about all of us. Like, if she's saying you have other grandchildren, let's pretend that your thought is, she thinks I'm a bad mother. I must be a bad mom, or just whatever goes on there. I'm just get throwing it. I don't think you're thinking that, but if you were, that's an irrational, unreasonable thought. Just like if you tell her you're not going over there and she can come over here and she thinks that, like, all these other things, that's just irrational, unreasonable thoughts. Every one of us has them. I think sometimes when we step back and realize that, I mean, I just want y'all to think about, like, somebody had posted earlier, I've got to work tomorrow. I'm going to be surrounded by cookies and brownies all day long. Guess what that is? That's an irrational, unreasonable thought. Because if that, like, let's just even pretend what being surrounded by foods that trigger you, you're probably thinking, I have no control. That is an irrational, unreasonable thought for all of you. Because we absolutely know humans control what they put in their mouth. There's only been one woman in Nobia's history who's ever told me this is what happens. I was sitting there and someone came over. They literally shoved the food in my mouth. You know how I always tell y'all, you actually do control, have total control around food. Because you're the one that has to do the eating. You may feel out of control. You may have nervous system stuff going on, everything. But when you tell yourself you're out of control, you're telling yourself a lie. What you can tell yourself is, I'm likely to be activated. I'm likely to feel out of control. Sometimes my natural reactions to these foods are, these types of situations tend to bring up wanting to eat in me. Like, that is already a better truth than I'm out of control. That is irrational. So we always have to remember, every one of us thinks irrationally. Every one of us jumps to conclusions. Welcome to the club. It's just sometimes we think other humans shouldn't be doing it in certain situations, especially if it's a reflection on me. Like, look, if y'all can think irrationally about a bowl of mac and cheese or a brownie, then just imagine that your other humans in your life, when you are changing family traditions or the family traditions are changing on you, you could be a little irrational too. And that just gives us understanding for how everybody is. Let me tell you the no BS woman that actually got force fed. I always say, like, none of you are going and getting tied down to a table and everybody's like, you're going to eat turkey and stuffing and macaroni and cheese where you want to or not, bitch. Somebody get me the plunger. Well, lo and behold, a lady the other day posted how she was sitting on the couch and her toddler grandkid, she was just sitting there. He came over, literally took a cookie and shoved it in her mouth. And she said, I guess I'm the one that actually gets food shoved in their mouth. I was like, all right, none of us are overweight because we got too many toddlers running around, landmining us with a cookie. Like, oh my God, I was just watching TV and the toddler came over and shoved a cookie in my mouth. So on that note, all of you who celebrate Thanksgiving, please have an amazing one. One more thing came in and then I'm going to get out of here. How can I control the urge to always have something sweet? That's my downfall. Talk about an irrational thought. That's my downfall. Modi, here's what I would tell myself. I will never control my urges around having something sweet if I keep calling them my downfall instead of how can I normalize wanting something sweet after dinner? Well, I've done it for a long time, which means my brain's going to keep asking for it. That's why it's happening. It's not a downfall. It's a normal habitual pattern that I've developed over a lifetime of eating something sweet at the end of meals. So that's like step one. You have to like start telling yourself like, this is a habit that has to get broken. This isn't a downfall. This is not a morality flaw. This is not a moral problem in me. This is not a bad behavior. This is not a shameful event. Because if you do that, then every time you want something sweet, you already kick up a lot of anxiety around it. Oh my God, I'm having that urge again. This is wrong. It's like, no, it makes sense. If every fucking meal you eat something sweet, guess what? You're going to want something sweet for a long time. So now we just have to stop calling it our downfall. Now we have to stop calling it our moral failing. We have to say like, oh, this is just going to be a tough night or a tough meal. I've got to break the habit of eating something sweet because I've done it so many times. That takes the temperature down. Then guess what? You don't eat something sweet and it doesn't feel great. And you think it's unfair and you think all these other things and you keep reminding yourself, it's not unfair. I'm just breaking a habit pattern. I'm breaking my brain from wanting that. Now, one transition thing that y'all can do is if you're always wanting something sweet is plan your meal, start planning some fruit or something at the end. Have a transition thing. And a lot of you are like, plan for dessert. Have some desserts every now and then, but what we're really talking about is a habitual wanting to end a meal with sweets. I don't want y'all to spend the rest of your, like, where else in the world do people eat dessert after every single fucking meal? Nowhere. Like, maybe back in the 1800s, that was royalty did at big fancy pants dinners they had every night. But, like, I remember when my grandmother was growing up on the farm in the 1920s, there was no fucking dessert after dinner. Like, you went to bed. But what we do is we get kind of get used to this. I would rather y'all, rather than thinking, I need to plan dessert every night, is start thinking about, do I even want to be someone who ends every meal with a dessert? Or do I want to be, so like when I think about the totality of my lifestyle, when I think about who I want to be, do I want to be someone who has to eat dessert every night? Or do I want to be someone who eats desserts when they're worth it? And most of the time they could care less. Like, that's how I've become. I am just someone who could care less about dessert, except for when it's something really good. Every now and then I start getting these, like, I'll start wanting like a blondie, or I'll start wanting something specific. And then I will plan those. Every now and then I go through periods where I don't mind having ice cream at night sometimes, or I'll want like cookies or whatever. And I'm just like, all right, so this week, like these nights, let's plan to have something sweet. I just want y'all to like, it's not just about like, just plan it. You can have anything you want. It's more about who do you really want to be at the end? And then what is going to be all the little steps we do to bridge ourselves to get there? If you do want to be someone who eats dessert every fucking night, then just say, I want to be the kind of person that needs dessert every night. So I'm going to need to eat less dinner to have room for the dessert. Why do you think they used to say save room for dessert? Because it used to not be a big thing to be gluttonous with everything. Like we somehow in this country have gotten to where, especially in our country, you go to Cheesecake Factory, you're eating a meal that would, like years ago, would have been for four people. So we just kind of have to think about things a little bit. I think it's fine to plan it. Plan a little dessert every night if that's going to bridge you to becoming someone who doesn't eat something sweet every night. But for some of you, you're like, I just don't want to be the kind of person who has to end their meals with something sweet. Because a lot of us are ending meal, like we have to end breakfast, we have to end lunch, and we have to end dinner with something sweet. If we do something salty, our brain automatically says, I got to have something sweet too. And you probably want to decondition that response of your tongue. And that's literally just a pattern. So sometimes bridging with even just having fruit, and then eventually, because fruit will decondition the extreme amount of sugar that you're putting on your tongue. So it's like dulling its senses. It's easier to kind of let it go a little bit later. All right. That is it for the day. Y'all have a really good rest of your week. I got my mile in. I will be posting later today. I'm still going strong. Well, I didn't actually get a mile. I will say this. I didn't get a mile in. I got a walk in. I had to walk my mom's dog. She is a slow poke, but I got 20 minutes in with her and I still got my workout in. So I will post my mile a day. If you're following me over in the Facebook group, it's Corinne's Mile a Day. If you look at hashtag Corinne's advice, you'll see all kinds of advice I give people. And you'll also be able to see all the Mile a Day posts that I've been doing along with some, I've been given some practical tips most days and stuff like that. Y'all have a good one. Bye y'all.